You can meet and hear Bill Barr, Albert Moeller, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Joel Bierman, and Will Wheaton at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th in Chicago. For more information, visit IssuesETC.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago. Yesterday was the 17th anniversary of the death of Terri Schiavo. It's been a long time, but it seems like, in a lot of ways, just yesterday. Are things better for people in Terri's condition? Not brain dead, not in a persistent vegetative state, not in a coma, just simply unable to care and feed herself. Are things better for people in that condition now than they were 17 years ago? Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to mark the 17th anniversary of Terri Schiavo's death, Bobby Schindler. He's the brother of Terri Schiavo and president of the Terri Schiavo Life and Hope Network. Bobby, welcome back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
What is what you call the accepted version of history regarding Terri's life and death?
Well, sure. Now, that's actually Lynn Vincent, who's going to be producing a 13-part podcast series on reinvestigating Terri's death. She kind of makes that statement in her tease of her podcast, but I wholeheartedly believe that there's much about Terri's case, even today, that's been reported inaccurately and really a lot of the lies that still exist about Terri and her condition. And I mean, just some of them very quickly are that this was Terri's so-called wish to die, that Terri was in a persistent vegetative state. She was not. That Terri was brain dead. She was not. Was not in a coma. That she was on artificial life support. That is untrue. Terri was on a feeding tube. She had difficulty swallowing because of her brain injury and therefore needed a feeding tube in order to administer her food and hydration. But that was the only thing sustaining her, just like it sustains all of us. There's also suspicious circumstances surrounding the night of Terri's collapse, but it gets reported time and time again that Terri's collapse was due to some type of eating disorder. So there's just a lot that's been reported over the years that continues to get regurgitated. And I'm hoping with this new podcast that's being launched yesterday that it's going to expose and really shed more light on Terri's case and condition, which is contrary to much of what was reported back then and has continued to be reported today.
Tell us the real story of your sister, Terri.
Well, sure. Terri, she was 26 years old. She was, as far as we knew, she was perfectly healthy when she had this accident while she was home alone with her husband. Our whole family was living in St. Petersburg, Florida. My mom and my dad, younger sister Suzanne, were a very close family. We spent a lot of time together. And I received a call early. It was February 25th, and when my father had contacted me and said that Terri and I lived in the same apartment complex. She was living there with her husband, Michael, as I said, and I was there. And that's when I walked in and Terri was on the floor. She had collapsed. And that's when everything started for our family. We went from one day where just kind of living our day to day to the next where we were soon to learn that Terri was going to become dependent on others for her care. What started out as cooperation with Michael Schiavo, who was a guardian, to provide Terri the best care possible, turned into this monumental battle to try and save her life when Michael petitioned the court to end her life after he received a medical malpractice lawsuit where there was a significant amount of money that was he would inherit upon Terri's death. So it was just our family's effort, and really it was a 12-year legal effort to try and stop Michael, block him from removing Terri's food and hydration, and it culminated after it really received international publicity in 2005 and Terri's feeding tube was removed and our family had to witness a death by dehydration and starvation after Michael was successful in the courts to get permission to remove Terri's feeding tube. And our family had to witness something that was barbaric. No family should ever have to witness. And to this day, the whole experience today is, even today when I think about it and look back, it's just surreal. And I can hardly believe that it continues to happen even today as we speak.
Did Michael end up inheriting that money?
We just don't know. The court closed or would not allow any of the records. We don't know what happened to the money after Terri passed. We do know that a significant portion was the attorney that Michael hired, I guess through his fees. Most of the money was used to pay him in order to kill Terry. But aside from that, we just don't know how much of the money was spent or how much money Michael inherited from the trust. Was about $1 million when he started this pursuit on Terry's life. And I don't think he ever anticipated the case extending or turning into such a protracted legal battle. And if he was successful when he had first petitioned the court, he would have standed to inherit close to $1 million. So we just don't know how much he ended up receiving once Terry died.
You mentioned all the misinformation that has persisted for the last 17 years about Terry's condition. What was her real condition before her death?
Well, she was a woman with a brain injury. I mean, she had a significant brain injury, but as I mentioned, because she had difficulty swallowing, she needed a feeding tube in order to receive her food and hydration. Feeding tubes are quite common today, and it's an easy procedure for someone to receive a feeding tube. But she was responding in the early days. She was receiving aggressive therapy and rehabilitation, and she was starting to speak. So she was improving. And our family loved her just the way she was. I mean, we didn't know how much she was going to progress, but she was mobile in a wheelchair. We could take her anywhere. And actually, we did take her. My parents did take her to different places when Michael would allow us back before he started his intention to end her life. But nevertheless, she was a woman with a disability. And as our attorney once said during this case, it's how brain injured do you have to be in order for society to let you live? And that's what we're seeing today. People that do acquire brain injuries, depending on the level of the brain injury and what they can or can't do, they almost have to prove to society that they're worthy of life. And that's what we were confronted with Terry, our family, when the courts deemed her that her quality of life was such that she wasn't worthy of life and therefore ruled to end it.
What kind of restrictions did Michael eventually put on the family before Terry's death about access to her?
Oh, gosh. It was just a constant battle. Michael was using really his guardianship power, his guardianship as a weapon against my family. And if he ever became upset, if there was any reason for him to cut off our visitation rights to see Terry, he would do that. And that happened several times. And he also restricted visitation to only a handful of people. So he basically could deny anybody, close friends, close family, from seeing my sister, visiting her. And he also, towards the, I guess it was the last couple years of this fight, he wasn't permitting Terry to go outside. Her room became very just dark and just depressing, so to speak, when you would walk in there, and just really did everything he could to, I think, find a way to really hurt Terry's will to live, because, as I said, she was a woman with a disability, and we were doing everything to try and help her, and really the only stimulation she was receiving during that time is when my family could go into the room and just spend time with her, because she wasn't receiving therapy. She wasn't even receiving a range of motion.
The theme of the podcast you mentioned earlier is not every crime is against the law. How does that apply in Terry's case?
Well, I think if you look at the case, if you look at the timeline, this case and Michael's and his the wishes that he claims Terry made before her collapse, it was all hearsay. It seems to me, and it's become quite clear, this was all premeditated. And although Michael was permitted to end Terry's life, I think the reasons for it were, as I said, were built on lies, and he fabricated those lies and perjured himself in front of the judge in order to seek permission to end Terry's life. But I mean, you can also compare it to abortion. Just because abortion is legalized doesn't mean that it's morally or ethically correct. It's still a grave injustice to kill an unborn child. And I think when you look at people with brain injuries and that are being sustained by food and hydration, the same is applicable to with intent to kill someone by taking away their food and hydration in order to end their life is a grave injustice. And even if our society looks at it as being so-called legal, or the medical community looks at it as being legal, I think we have to look at it as being something that should not be permitted, and really a violation against God and the value of life.
Have things changed legally for people in Terry's circumstance since Terry's death?
Well, I it was happening before Terry's death and continues to happen. I mean, you can look at feeding tubes, for example. Feeding tubes, food and water through feeding tubes for people like Terry and other medically vulnerable who had difficulty swallowing were once considered basic and ordinary care. the feeding tubes have been reworded now, where they're classified as medical treatment or artificial life support or extraordinary care. And for that reclassification, we can now deny or withdraw from individuals, and it's legal now in all 50 states, where once it wasn't, when it was defined as basic and ordinary care. So when you see these types of policy changes, you can also look at the persistent vegetative state diagnosis. We're using that now based on someone in this type of condition to end someone's life. And there's other policy changes too, and changes in the law that are all really placing the power to end life to the medically vulnerable in the hands of ethics committees, of hospital administrators, of insurance companies. So there has been a lot of changes in our healthcare system today, and it's all for one purpose, and that's to make it easier, so to speak, to kill someone that might be costing too much of a cost to continue providing them treatment. And I think people are unaware of these changes, and I also think today that we think we're guaranteed to get the treatment that we want for our loved ones, and that's not going to always be the case.
Is Terry's situation and story unique?
I think Terry's was the first case. Well, she was the first woman to be court ordered killed by death by dehydration. But what happened to Terry, unbeknownst to our family at the time, was common. And what I mean by that, meaning having food and hydration taken away from people like her, unable to speak. So I think it was unique in the sense that it was for the first time, I think people saw what can happen to someone with this type of brain injury, this type of disability. But it wasn't unique because it was already happening, and it continues to happen today. Terry's case was not isolated then, and it's only worsened since. And with the nonprofit that we form, we're seeing on a regular basis families call us in crisis where their loved one is in really, you could say, the crosshairs of having their treatment stopped or their care stopped. So I think in that sense, you know, what happened to Terry is not unique.
What is Terry's legacy then?
Well, our family, in response to her death, we established the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, and we're working as patient advocates. And during Terry's case, because of the publicity, the attention, we were able to really connect with resources, with professionals, with organizations that we are now working with to help families that call us for help. And it's only because of what Terry went through that puts our family in the position to serve as patient advocates. And we're also trying to establish a brain injury center in memory of my sister, and the hopes in the next couple of years we'll have that up and running to serve people with brain injuries similar to that of Terry. And I work every day just not let people forget what they did to my sister and the fact that it was, as I said, it was not isolated and continues to happen. And we really need to educate ourselves to this eugenic worldview or this eugenic value system that has infiltrated our healthcare system. So people are aware that they're going to have to advocate for loved ones if they're unable to speak and really be in a position to fight for them and fight for the treatment if they're confronted with that type of situation. So I think it's only because of Terry that's put our family in this situation to help other families, to help them to avoid what happened to Terry, not happen to these families.
Have you and the family been able to forgive Michael?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I'd be certainly, and I've said this before, it's an ongoing process. People ask me this question quite often. You know, we have to pray for Michael to have a conversion. I think he could be a very powerful witness and testimony if he did have a conversion of heart and to advocate for the person that he with intent killed. So for me personally, it's a struggle, but I'd be completely open to communicating with Michael if he ever expressed any willingness to do that and see if at all he could work to help people with these types of conditions and be a voice for them instead of the person, what he did to my sister and with, you know, feeling that she wasn't worthy of life and therefore worked very hard to end it.
What can you tell us about a new podcast released yesterday called Lawless?
Sure. Well, our family's encouraged. We really don't know. Lynn Vincent, she's an author. In fact, she co-authored the book Heaven is for Real, which turned into a very successful movie. And she had actually published a story way back in 2002 about one of the first journalists to write about Terry's case. And so she was still interested in Terry's case and decided to reinvestigate. I guess there were some things that were still bothering her about Terry's situation. So she spent about a year and a half really taking a comprehensive look, interviewing people involved in Terry's case, her family included, and she's put together a 13-part podcast, and she's going to just take another look at Terry's case, and I don't know what she's found or what through her investigation, so I'm just anxious and excited, if that's the right word, to listen to Lynn's podcast to see what she's found in her investigative research.
Bobby Schindler is the brother of Terry Schiavo, president of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network. You'll find a link to the new podcast, Lawless, at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Bobby, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
After the break, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Get ready to listen and to give us a call, 1-877-623-MY-IE.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's fables and classic children's literature, math and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.